show host here, our last talk show host, for hanging on even as I struggled through the traffic, struggled through the heat, struggled through the meaninglessness of a late Thursday afternoon to make it to you for this edition of Bathrobs Beers Broadsides. More of them so-called blah, blah, blah about civil rights, hopefully to result in some real civil rights someday for poor people in Santa Cruz. Stay tuned. Here we are. Hey, on the line with us is none other than Fred Geiger. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Robert.
And you've been jaunting around the state in different trips here and there, but you've also done a lot of work around a lot of particular issues in the last year. I guess most recently, living wage?
A little on living wage. I wasn't one of the leaders on that, but I certainly support it. After all, it would be reasonable if people that work for the city were able to live.
Mm-hmm. The weekend. Yes. Well, what, you know, we had, I guess, a strange series of city council meetings where sleeping ban repeal devotees and living wage folks kind of patted each other on the back and tried not to stumble over each other. And I guess back in March, sleeping ban people, well, Mayor Sugar shut down the city council when sleeping ban people began lying down in front of the mic to dramatize the fact that council was doing nothing around the criminalization of homeless people at night under the city's sleeping ban, and living wage people didn't get much of a chance on their agenda, though we had a Sugar shut down that March meeting, and we had quite a long discussion with a lot of living wage people staying to support the sleeping ban repeal folks. And then, I guess, at the next meeting, we avoided a full-scale sleepout in order to give living wage people a chance to make their case, but then that was sort of dumped into committee for a couple of months and seriously delayed, if not destroyed, or I should say weakened.
Yeah. And then in the interim, the executive-level city employees got a 27% raise over 2 years, and Keith asked the city manager, Dick Wilson, how come he couldn't find any money for living wage when he was asked to, but he seemed to be able to find money for the executive raises without a problem. And the city manager didn't really have a good explanation except to say where he found the money, but not why he couldn't find it earlier for the people who were needing money more to live in Santa Cruz. The cost of living now is, you know, way beyond what most city employees can afford.
Mm-hmm. What is, you know, it looks like the city manager is often, his name comes up on a lot of these criminal investigations as to who killed the sleeping ban repeal, who killed living wage, who killed, a strong police review board. I mean, who dumped this project on the dolphin tenants in the beach flats. And, you know, who put Don Lane on as the staff person, as the head of the Homeless Issues Task Force. It seems that Dick Wilson's name comes up a lot. How long, do you know much about Dick Wilson, how long he's been a city manager, what his background is?
Well, I know he's been here a long time. He's been here since we had a conservative city government, and I imagine that he would probably be quite glad to tell you that he doesn't consider himself by any means a progressive. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm probably putting words in his mouth that are inaccurate on that one. And, you know, I think he's a very capable administrator, and I think he's also probably not a person who would be amenable to help furthering progressive changes in the direction of Santa Cruz city government,
mm-hmm.
which sort of puts us at odds with the majority of the voters from what I've seen in the last several elections.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz, Fred?
I've been in Santa Cruz for, let's see, this month it will be 27 years.
So you're not exactly a neophyte here,
well,
a newcomer.
I've been involved in various things since Lighthouse Field back in the 70s.
When Dick Wilson first came on, you don't remember when that was, do you?
I believe it would be late 70s.
And that was, of course, about the time when, well, 79, Bruce Van Allen and Mike Rotkin were elected. I was looking at the headlines of People's Press, that ancient Santa Cruz weekly or biweekly, talking about the wonderful progressive landslide that was proceeding and how they're... And I guess they also talked about a re-election. I'm not sure. They were doing four-year terms back then, too, right, for city council. But they were doing, I guess, spring elections rather than fall elections in those days.
I remember there was some kind of a jockeying around of the whole terms. Some people ended up with five-year terms and things like that. I don't remember exactly what happened.
But, you know, has Dick Wilson been kind of this conservative force from the beginning? And was there a time when he wasn't a conservative force?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think his politics have changed any. I'm not sure, you know, what the council majority was when he was hired. You know, I assume it would be a conservative council majority, but I'm not even sure it goes back so far. You know, just like the city attorney, I mean, it's basically been the same firm in there for literally decades, you know, representing the city of Santa Cruz, and there have been a number of instances where the city attorney has given advice that turned out to be wrong that always ends up being on the conservative side when he's wrong. He never makes mistakes on a liberal or progressive side in his advice, but only on a conservative side. I mean, I'm not saying that anyone's advice, even if they're a city attorney, should be expected to be perfect, but it is sort of interesting that it's always overly conservative if it is, in fact, off the mark. And I think that's another example of, you know, people working for the city that aren't really trying to push things in a very progressive direction, even though the voters apparently are.
You know, it's interesting. The progressives have, in fact, had a numerical majority on the city council since 1983, I guess it is, if not 1981.
81, I think, or 81. Alleged progressives, anyway.
Right. I know Marty Wormout and John Laird were elected in that year. And, of course, you've had a landslide, almost unanimously scan-endorsed slate since, well, I guess you had two so-called conservatives in the late 80s and then one in the early 90s, and then after that you had... You know, everybody who was on the city council was endorsed by SCAN, I guess, except one person, maybe.
Mike Hernandez was never endorsed by SCAN, fortunately.
Yes, and hopefully will not be this time either.
I don't think we have to worry too much about that.
Right. And, of course, then we have people like Kennedy and Rotkin, who kind of have separated from SCAN, but it seems that SCAN has not separated from them. We've never heard SCAN repudiating them or their policies. I mean, privately, you hear it from people like yourself. You're critical, I'm sure, of these folks on different issues. But SCAN as an organization seems ready to put them on panels and commissions and such. I mean, it's kind of confusing to some of us, but I don't want to stray. I have a tendency to do that. I want to get back to Dick Wilson, because you've been around for 27 years, which is, I've actually been around for a long period of time, too. I came to Santa Cruz in 1977, but I haven't really been here continuously since 88. So during that period of time, do you remember any particular decisions of the city manager or the city attorney, John Barisoni, that struck you as unusually conservative or, in the case of the city attorney, contradicted by a later decision or by law?
Well, yeah, you're probably aware of, I think, probably the most recent faux pas he made regarding police review board open meeting advice that he was giving. And actually an attorney hired by the Police Review Board
Bob Aronson,
Barisoni's advice as to whether a meeting did have to be an open meeting. And I think it was found, I don't know how the decision was made, but it was found that Barisoni was wrong in it.
It's interesting, yeah, what you're talking about is this meeting, which is actually happening, the second meeting of this group, which Sugar postponed for, I believe, 4.5 months, I have to assume to exclude the public, or because he didn't want to deal with the issues that might come up, because why would you set up a committee and then postpone it for 4.5 months? It was a joint committee of the City Council Subcommittee and a Citizens Police Review Board Subcommittee with an eye to strengthening laws, and I guess this, to some extent, was partially the brainchild of Board Chair Arnie Leff, who was unwilling to hold Ordinance Committee meetings of his own and felt he was powerless unless he got the okay from the City Council. As sort of the Sugar "I don't have the votes" syndrome, which we've heard that wail for the last 2 years from Sugar endlessly when we ask him to advocate for something. You don't need the votes to advocate for something, but that's been Sugar's position on the sleeping ban, on Dolphin Lee,
and
on other issues.
Hopefully we'll have a remedy for the lack of votes on several of those issues.
You don't have the advocates, you're never going to get the votes anyway, has always been my feeling, but I share that hope with you, you know, Fred. But This committee will be meeting on Monday. I wanted to let people know, since you brought up this issue with Barisone.
And this is a subcommittee of the Citizens Police Review Board?
It's a subcommittee of both the city CPRB and the City Council. They are both, meeting together. Catherine Byers, Keith Sugar, and I think one of the council member, I don't remember who it is, and then three members of the Police Review Board, including Arnie Leff, Tony Guerrero, and again, another Dan Alper, actually.
What's the time and place on that meeting?
It's at 5:30, and I believe it's the ABC room of the Municipal Auditorium, though it could be the City Council Chambers.
Right across the street, either way.
Right, one's across the street and the other, 5:30 on Monday.
Well, people will attend that. I think that people do support a Police Review Board law that's effective, and I know the Sentinel, when they announced that Scott Kennedy was signing up to run for council again, they credit him with two things, which I have to say is pretty modest in 8 years if you can only get credited for two things. I can't remember the second one. It must not have been very significant, at least not to me. But the one that I do remember was he was supporting the Police Review Commission and law that set it up. But as many people now have come to understand, it's completely ineffective, and it basically relies on the police chief being willing to cooperate and be willing to release information to the public, which he isn't. And basically, it's just a waste of taxpayers' money. I mean, not that I'm opposed to anybody who wants to have a police review board or anybody who's on it trying to do a good job, but basically we need to strengthen it so that it actually can function and function publicly. If you have a democracy and you have problems in a democracy, that they should be put out in public so people can tell what's going on and not done at the discretion of the head of the agency who's in trouble or at his had his approval or in any way having any say-so
right.
from that department or the head of that department as to the public knowing the full fact. I mean,
Chief Belcher, yeah.
This is a democracy. The citizens are entitled to the fact of what their government
well,
is doing.
Certainly we're entitled to a democracy. We don't have one, of course, but we should have one, and it would be good if we did have one. And Belcher is the third of that strong triumvirate, and of course it also includes Seal Cirillo and Jim Lang, all these $100,000-plus department heads that the city council has been unwilling to, shall we say, retire and get some new blood in there. We haven't even been able to hear Christopher Crone or Keith Sugar or anybody, even yourself. Well, I guess you yourself have spoken up, but you've gotten sufficiently pissed to talk about
me.
I mean, you're speaking up now.
Yes, indeed.
You know, you think that perhaps we should have some new blood in there?
Well, I think we should have a city administration that reflects the will of the voters. I mean, that's not too outrageous of a statement, I don't think, to make.
Right.
And I think the will of the voters is, even the Sentinel admits everyone's always voting for progressives, and whether they turn out to be progressive or not is a different issue, but nevertheless, it seems that that's what the voters want, and if that's what the voters want, there's no excuse that I can see that we shouldn't be having that.
Right. And of course, the question is how to get it. These elections don't seem to be the way to do it. Every time we turn in a new patch of people, you know, they turn tail and run the other way, or at least they get cowed by those who are in the center power positions, like Sugar and Crone were cowed by Byers. Fitzmaurice immediately moved to the right. We have people like Emily Riley, who I like her as an individual. You know, here's an example. I don't know if, you know, Scan's going to endorse her or not. She seems to be a favorite. But she's... Here's a person who hasn't even read The Sleeping Ban, even though she was on the mayor's select committee on this issue, and she's a very sincere and sweet person and, you know, compassionate, caring kind of individual in a private way, but then, you know, I'm sure so is John Mahaney, and even a case like that might be made for Louis Rittenhouse or George Bush.
Nice people all, yeah. Well, I hope for the best, you know, as always. I am disappointed in the results of the last election, not in who that we got elected, but on some of the issues, two, like Christopher and Keith, I think, have done well. Tim, I hope, as I've been hearing, he's doing better, and Catherine Byers didn't do as we had hoped she would do, so...
Back to the living wage issue, Fred, because I think you know a lot more about that than I do. Want to give us a chronology of what's been happening with that?
Sure. And I got to head out.
I know you're out of here. You're off to a meeting yourself, right?
Exactly.
Is that one people should know about or be at?
No, this is one of those secret cabals.
Oh, this is the constituents meeting of the...
Yeah, it's like basically the old campaign staffs from the last election.
Encourage you to tell Sugar, I mean, there's, for example, a Brown Act violation date coming up tomorrow, and so far I've heard nothing from Mayor Sugar regarding any willingness to respect the public on public comment, not evict people he doesn't like, you know, allow for meaningful communication between the public. None of that is something
he's
going to...
You're talking about the CPRB review?
No, I'm talking about the city council meetings generally. Brown Act, I've been talking about violations are concerned the Sugar's tendency to arrest, evict, and silence people at the meetings he doesn't like, and this is really distressing to those of us who may not agree with, you know, who actually agree with a lot of his positions, but his handling is so authoritarian and so capricious that it just puts us in a position where we think, you know, better anybody than Sugar at some point. So,
well, yeah, I think you said two things that are worth repeating there. One is that a lot of his positions are good, and two is that maybe sometimes you wish that he didn't handle things the way he does. I think I could probably agree with you to some extent. I think he's pretty stressed out. It's a heavy burden, and I hope that he will have release from that stress and maybe handle things a little bit.
Ask him why he seconded Catherine Byer's outrageous decision to force Mercy Charity's housing on the Dolphin tenants and dump the Lee tenants. I mean, there's an example.
Yeah, I would like to hear more about that. I don't know much about what's been going on.
But give us the living wage before you can, if you will. Just kind of a brief update.
Well, I don't know, Robert. I understand they're going to go for like about an $11 an hour living wage. I think Mike Rodkin wants to leave some kind of a legacy that he can point at. He originally opposed it and said he didn't have enough information. Although, as several people pointed out, just because they got their packets just before the meeting or the day before or something, it didn't mean that there was no information out there. There had been meetings going on regularly with reams of information. I have a big, thick packet myself of an analysis of this from other places. So there was lots of information out there. I'm not sure why he didn't feel he had enough information to vote on it, but apparently now he has gone along and decided that $11 an hour is not an outrageous salary in the city of Santa Cruz. It comes to like $22,000 a year, which is, you know, not much, and he wants to be known as labor-friendly, which is one of the things he was elected on. So he perhaps is trying to establish a grounds for another run 2 years down the line. But I think he will also have to answer to his record, just as Scott Kennedy will be held to his record in this election. Unfortunately, SCAN has been maintaining an extensive collection of the vote history on various issues, and we will be publicizing that information so people can decide if these people like Kennedy or Rodkin should be reelected based on the voting record they have in the past.
And I guess my question is whether Sugar or Crone or Fitzmaurice should be recalled considering their voting record, but anyway.
Voting records aren't that bad if you take a look at it. I mean, there's a lot of issues that weren't maybe brought up that you would like to have seen brought up, but once again, that's a controversy on whether people should bring things up and be defeated or try to wait and lobby until they have the votes.
Living wage, then,
on both sides.
How long has their Living Wage Coalition been organized together?
Oh, I'd say about a year, Robert.
And at what point did it finally hit the council agenda?
Well, they had a bunch of subcommittee meetings going on for months and months and months, and I think the council first maybe heard it in late June or something like that, and then it was put off for more study. And then I understand while I was gone in late July that they actually did a first reading, but you might know more about that than I did.
I got you. Actually, I was there, but my, you know, my knowledge of it is not as clear as it might be because
yeah,
I'm
my understanding,
expert.
I think they're ready for a second reading soon, and that would be the requirement for it to be enacted.
Now, is this a second reading of, in fact, the law you want, or is this a watered-down deal?
I think it's been reduced from $14 an hour to $11 an hour, I believe, at Mike Rodkin's request and maybe Tim Fitzmaurice. And I believe they had the votes, let's see, Hernandez and Matthews had to eliminate themselves from voting because of conflict of interest, which left 5 voting members. And I believe it was 4-1 with Byers dissenting at the last reading that I heard at $11 an hour rate. And I think there has to be another reading before it becomes final, and then after 30 days would be adopted as law.
Now, would it go into effect immediately? I heard something about a year's delay or something.
Well, they may want to phase it in. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that yet.
Well, if anybody is listening who has more information on the living wage, please give us a call, because though it's not a specific issue relating to homeless people generally, because they never get in a position where they can get a living wage from the city, because the city has no affirmative action program for hiring homeless people, and actually, you know, homeless people, it's very hard for them to get those kind of jobs.
Yeah.
Still, I think it's important for us to know, because, you know,
sure.
that's what we're aiming at.
Yeah, if you don't want more people to become homeless, they have to have jobs where they can afford to rent.
Any meetings coming up or events you think we should know about, Fred?
Oh, boy, let's see. August is a pretty slow month, I guess. Of course, there's a SCAN endorsement forum later on that will be on September 6th, 5:30, Loudoun Nelson, where all members in good standing can vote in public, contravening the Sentinel's rumor-mongering that this is somehow all done in the back room. It's all done in an open public auditorium. Anyone who wants to go in can go in and listen. There's actually some Republicans that are SCAN members, and everything's done above board, and the full membership that's paid up and eligible to vote votes, and the votes are counted up on the stage, and we arrive at the endorsed candidates based on how well we believe they would represent the...
And then Bernice and Skip don't deliver the resolutions to the city council until after the crucial meetings. Oh, sorry, it's speaking a little out of turn there.
That's not an endorsement form.
Of course not.
Anyway, yeah, that's the biggie coming up that I can see. Like I say, most of the commissions... there is a big meeting tonight. The Planning Commission is meeting, dealing with proposals to change the whole redevelopment area zoning, not everything in it, but all that would include the beach area and the downtown area. And I understand a couple of the progressive members on that body, the Planning Commission, who happen to be city council candidates, Dick DeBrava and Ed Porter, are interested in forcing property developers, if they're going to build lots of big buildings with offices for yuppies to come in and inflate the housing prices, that these buildings should be required to have affordable or moderate income housing on the upper stories, and perhaps they would allow them to build taller if they are willing to do that, and if they're not, they would have to keep it to three stories, otherwise they might be able to go to a step back five stories. So if anybody's listening and wants to support that idea, I think it's a really good idea.
Where and when is the meeting?
That is tonight, 7:30 at the city council chambers at the Planning Commission.
That's great, Fred. I know you're over time. I appreciate your taking the call, and maybe we can get back to you at a later time.
Radio.
All right.
Hang in there.
All righty.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that was activist Fred Geiger, active certainly for decades in Santa Cruz politics, often apologetic for SCAN or supportive of SCAN, and apologetic for council members Crone and Sugar, as you can hear, which... certainly is his right. I've taken him over the coals for it many a time and will continue to in the future. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My name is Robert Norse, also known as Bathrobes Pierre Robert for the tattered blue, sometimes red, bathrobe you see me sporting about the streets as I sing We Shall Overcome regarding the such foolishness as the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban, the 11 to 8:30 a.m. bar on homeless sleeping, whether it be on public property, in their own private vehicles, whether it be actually in any building whatsoever except a domicile. Currently in Santa Cruz, there's shelter space for only 5%, actually 3% is a better estimate, of the 700 to 1,500 homeless people, and that's 28 spaces on the floors of two churches a night, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and you can be pretty sure that those spaces are full. So in essence, there is no, count it, N-O emergency shelter for people in the city of Santa Cruz. And I would have to say in the county of Santa Cruz for emergency shelter, there's also the Watsonville ISSP program, but I don't think that that's much bigger, and I suspect it's just as filled. So to say it's less than tiny, as Paul Brundell insisted it was when we talked to him 3 or 4 days ago, when he refused to sign on to a letter to Marty Wormhout, the county supervisor, asking that there be safe sleeping spaces for people in the county now that the city has given safe sleeping spaces the boot, is certainly bogus. I mention this on the air because Paul Brundell of the Community Action Board and the Shelter Project, also the Homeless Issues Task Force, he's been a county-funded bureaucrat for 2 decades. He should know better, and he seems to be acting at cross-purposes to other activists, which upsets me, and I'm concerned about this. I'm sure he's not willing to go public with this kind of stuff. He operates through committees. He operates through discussions with individuals privately and through the Internet, and I've been finding that increasingly disagreeable over the last few weeks, both in terms of the Dolphin Lee Project and in terms of the sleeping ban and attempts by some of us homeless activists meeting every Friday, for those of you who are interested. That's tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Holiday Inn under the leadership of Michael Schmidt, who lets us use the room at the Chamber of Commerce's headquarters at the Holiday Inn on Ocean Street. We'd like to get something of a united front, but if we can't, that's fine. But I think it's important for those who want to kind of be in the know to know that I guess some folks are rather closely tied to their funding or possibly to conservative opinions or not to offending certain politicians like Wormhout and Byers, and that seems to be Paul Brundell's position at the moment. I invite Paul Brundell to join this discussion on air. He can be reached. I'm sure he's probably at home now. And perhaps my producer would even give him a call and invite him to listen in and call in. I don't trash people without giving them an opportunity to respond. And I'm particularly concerned that Paul Brindell, who is, gets paid for every meeting he goes to, I go to these meetings and I don't get paid, and I see him sitting next to me. I know he's getting paid by the Community Action Board and the Shelter Project. I went to dozens of hours, might even be say several hundred hours of Homeless Issues Task Force meetings, and most of us didn't get a dime, but there were two people in the room who did get paid. One was Paul Brindell, and the other was Ken Cole, Homeless Services Center head. And it's not that these men haven't done some good things for homeless people. They have. The Shelter Project, Community Action Board, as long ago as 1983, came out for opposing the entire camping ordinance, given the shelter emergency, the fact that in Santa Cruz in 1990, 1995, and again in 1998, the city officially declared a shelter emergency. Yet, at the same time, they continue to enforce a law which criminalizes people who either fall asleep outside or make their own shelter by setting up a tent on public property somewhere, and usually in places that have no significance in terms of any violation of trespass or abusive conduct in any way, but simply need places to sleep. And though Paul is part of the Community Action Board, has fairly regularly reaffirmed that position, that's just about his only strong position that I can remember at the moment. And I've got to admit, I'm not in the coolest mood. I have been looking at his emails for the last couple of weeks, and listening to him talking on SCAN subcommittees, Santa Cruz Action Network, the organization that will be a strong force in the next election, a group of people who actually, I think, did some good things at the end of May when they supported the tenants of the Dolphin and Lee apartments, asked the city not bulldoze their apartments and run them essentially out for a picture-pretty Mercy Charities housing project that would house far less people than the people they were evicting, and essentially would require many people who are currently in affordable housing at the Dolphin and Lee apartments to become homeless. SCAN asked that these two apartments complexes that the city negotiate with Residentes Unidos, the group of tenants starting with the Lee, who also got Dolphin tenants together under the leadership of activist Nena Ruiz, to sit down and meet, talk about the guarantees so the people weren't just dumped from their housing with vague promises from Cecil Cirillo, head of the redevelopment agency, Elizabeth Vogel of Mercy Charities Housing, Tim Fitzmorris, the point man for this project at City Council. And all we got for that concern was silence. But SCAN endorsed a resolution, which you may have heard me kind of twitting Fred Geiger in the last interview. This SCAN resolution was passed on May 31st, supposed to get to City Council fairly rapidly. It was forwarded by Tom Shaver of the SCAN, who was SCAN, he was a coordinator to the co-chairs, Skip Spitzer and Bernice Belton, who for some curious reason, and I do speak with some sarcastic skepticism here, did not get that resolution to them until the 19th, which was six crucial days after the City Council met and made decisions about the Dolphin Lee project. They did not have the SCAN resolution, the SCAN wording sitting before them. They had sort of some notion it had passed, I'm sure, but it was not publicly announced in a clear way and presented to them. And the excuse we got was that Bernice Belton was mourning for her husband's death. However, it seemed a little unlikely that this would necessarily stop that kind of thing because, first of all, Bernice, Skip Spitzer was co-chair. He could have carried it in. He did not. I haven't talked to him yet as to why that never happened, but if he's listening, please call in. And if anyone else, by the way, is interested, we have an open phone line at 427-3772, 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Again, talking about a variety of issues, as usual, roaming all over the map as my mouth does the driving. And that's, of course, a perilous situation for all you out there. I pity you, but I'm enjoying myself, so I guess the answer is get yourself a talk show. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the August 10th, 2000 edition. We are on twice a week, 6 to 8 on Thursdays and 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon on Sundays. Although the Sunday show coming up may not happen because I may be heading for Los Angeles, try to be doing some civil rights protesting down there against police violence nationally at the state level and in Los Angeles, as well as harassment of the homeless down there. It's still a question to me as to whether I can go on that trip because there's a lot of stuff here, writing deadlines I have that are coming up that I have to deal with. So not sure what's going to happen with that, but I invite anybody who's going to Los Angeles to give a call and maybe brief people on how they can get together down there, what they can do, who they can call in Santa Cruz to get some sort of short-term assistance on that. I'm kind of looking around the studio to see if I can find a quick phone number. I'm sure I can, because I was at a direct action group meeting last night, and we kind of formed affinity groups and so forth. And if I don't go down there, I'll be helping from a distance here in Santa Cruz and trying to be a faithful broadcaster and get some stuff out there, although I know Vinny and others are just really great at putting out that kind of information. And really, Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, is the station to turn to if you want to get information about the Democratic Party convention and the alternate. There's a homeless convention going on at the same time down there, or homeless counter convention, as well as one would hope, massive protests in the streets against the Tweedledee, Tweedledum, eve of destruction approach of the Republican Democratic parties, the two-headed monster which only leads in one direction. Unfortunately, in Santa Cruz local politics, we have a similar situation. But you know what I'm going to do now is, after a brief musical interlude, and what I'm going to do now is we're going to go to the Citizens Police Review Board City Council Subcommittee. We talked about that with Fred Geiger, if you were listening a few minutes ago. That's the joint group that was supposedly formed to look over strengthening the position of the Citizens Police Review Board, the group that is supposed to be your check against police abuse. In fact, it is their rubber stamp on the police department, a whitewash generally, and kind of a sad situation. I'm going to play you a bit more of what happened at the first ever meeting of this joint committee, which had three council members and three Citizens Police Review Board members who are appointed by City Council, supposedly again to beef up the law. In essence, what you got is Catherine Byers, who's sort of poo-pooing, suggests that the original purpose of this was simply to review complaints, and it wasn't to engage in any kind of policy statements, and that everything would have to be changed. And you have a few other people giving other opinions. You actually had Dan Alper saying he thought the whole board should be disbanded, which he told me privately, and I was kind of interested. But when he spoke about it at this public meeting, he said it was to be disbanded because it didn't give enough support to the police department, in the sense that the police department was not involved enough and things were too polarized. It might not be fair to say that he says it doesn't give enough support to the police department, but he said it doesn't include the police department enough in an interactive role in a decision-making capacity. And frankly, I would find that very alarming to have the police department sitting on the board. It already does sit on the board. They are not officially board members, but Sergeant Lee Sepulveda is the internal affairs investigator who sits on the dais with police officers. You almost always find Police Officers Association representative Barbara Williams sitting in the audience, and you find an armed police officer in uniform, has been Sergeant Andy Crane, frequently in the back row of those meetings. They're members of the public. They have the right to attend. They even have the right to attend in uniform, I guess. Maybe he's just passing by. But the attendance from the public, of course, has been virtually nil at almost all these meetings. I kind of abandoned it about a year ago, with a few exceptions. I tried for a few months with the new CPRB members, including the new chair, Arnie Leff, who is also running for city council now. Bad idea, Arnie. Quit while you're ahead. That's still my advice to you. Not that I have anything against you. Personally, nice guy. He met with me and with Becky Johnson, my producer, and also an active worker in Huff about a week ago. But his positions have not shifted at all. He's taken a series of bad positions on the police review board, refuses to advocate publicly for stronger action, standing up to Chief Belcher when such standing up is very important if people are to respect the police review board, even if it produces friction, even if it produces a court contest. For instance, CPRB has the power to subpoena, demand officers be present at public hearings. And, of course, they can fight that in court, and that's just fine. Let's take it to court and see where we are. Otherwise, we're nowhere anyway. But Leff keeps telling me he wants to wait for the right case. He wants to wait for the right city council backing. He wants to wait. And when we have people like Sandy Brown on the Citizens Police Review Board, whose heart is in the right place, but who's doing four different jobs. She was recently appointed co-chair of SCAN. She's working hard on the living wage campaign. And she has a series of other time-consuming jobs at CAB and the shelter. I don't know if she's in the shelter project, but certainly at CAB. And when we tell her, why don't you hold public meetings with constituents, which she used to do, she has no time. You can call her 3 and 4 and 5 times. She doesn't call back. This kind of irresponsibility by a public official is outrageous, and I've pointed this out to her before, even though I regard her as very sympathetic in terms of wanting to see police reform in the police department. But, you know, she's working on a joke board. She's unwilling to take the time necessary to either expose it at a press conference or stand up in an unmistakable way for people there and even meet with the public. I mean, she's been saying for months she's going to resign. "I'm going to resign from the Citizens Police Review Board," says Sandy Brown. But lo and behold, she's there the next day. One wonders if this is, again, part of the Arnie Left's strategy, which seems to be as a stepping stone to political power. That's what the Police Review Board looks like it is for him. It was that for Michael Hernandez, current council member. He was a member of the Citizens Police Review Board. I think he was Kennedy's appointee way back when. Could be wrong. I'm not sure if it was Kennedy, but he certainly is closely allied with Kennedy now. I don't like to see the CPRB as a footstool to power, because if that's the case, it just gets stepped on. And we just get stepped on. Let's hear a little bit of the CPRB and the City Council at this hearing last month. Again, a meeting postponed for 4 months, because when they were going to hold their first meeting considering whether to strengthen the Citizens Police Review Board, I insisted that it should be a public meeting. I wrote them. I told them the Brown Act required it. Mayor Sugar refused to accept that idea, went instead to Attorney John Barisone, who gave him the guidance that they could close the meeting. Why Sugar would want to close the meeting if he's interested in open process is beyond me. It's actually not. He's shown a predilection for closed meetings. I don't think he's in favor of open process. I think he's very uncomfortable with open process. I think he's really in the wrong job. He's temperamentally ill-suited for this position he's in. Anyway, he held the meeting, tried to close it. The attorney that was hired by the city for the special work on police review, a guy named Bob Aronson from Palo Alto, came in and told them, "You can't close this meeting. It has to be an open meeting." As I said. So I was correct. Not because I'm some great legal scholar. I might have been wrong technically and legally, but the fact is, morally, I think the issue was clear from the start. It should have been an open meeting. All these things should be open unless you're dealing with sensitive personnel or litigation matters, and that isn't what any of this is. The whole problem with a lot of the government we have today is they operate behind closed doors, and that's wrong, and that leads to polarized situations where the only kind of action you can get is through protesting and through confrontation, which really is what we have to do these days in order to get ourselves heard and to make some real changes, which has yet to happen, but that's, I think, the process that we've begun in the last year or two, some of us speaking out on issues like the Dolphin Lee and the sleeping ban, even living wage, although living wage has got more of an in than these other issues. So, CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board, didn't hold a meeting for 4 months, at least in the special committee with the City Council. Mayor Sugar refused to give an explanation, refused to answer at all. He said in early May, "I'll hold a meeting soon," and then in July he held a meeting. In other words, he's also got a strange understanding of the English language, or he's a liar. It's hard to tell which it is, or if it's both. I don't know. But I know that this kind of behavior, though one can forgive it once, twice, three times, four times, when it happens on a regular basis and repeatedly at City Council, becomes a blight. And that's what we have currently at City Council. And I'm really worried that's what we're going to have for the next few years if we get one of these compliant, "Oh, Keith Sugar, tell us the way," kind of City Council. So I'm unhappy and concerned about these issues. And let's hear what the CPRB City Council subcommittee finally talked about after 4 months. We're turning it in the middle because I played some of this at a previous edition of this show, but you'll be able to pick up what's going on, and I will be interrupting as ever. If you want to interrupt, give a call to 427-3772 and I'll put you on the air.
To me, talk about a different model.
And I'm
a little too familiar with the L.A. model, and I thought it was a little bit more. The one that I remembered liking the most was the Richmond, California model, where they have an independent investigator full-time. Mm-hmm. So there's two tracks. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the complaint by the IA, and there's a complaint by the independent investigator. It's expensive. We spend a day up there at Richmond with the police chief, with the independent investigator, both of them in the room, and, you know, really spent, I guess, a half a day. We did Berkeley that day too, but there are models out there, and then maybe a hybrid of some pieces that we can figure out where we're trying to go.
Well, when FTE or did it require support staff?
Oh, I'm sure it hired support staff, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
there's two full-time.
Yeah, now they're two full-time. Of course, they were ordered to have police review by the federal government. they were ordered to under whatever happened 20 years ago, some horrible things. And then there's the model in San Jose, and I'd like an evaluation on that model, because that came out just about the time we did this. San Jose put in the auditor, blah, 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 and I'm interested in that, whether it goes well or doesn't go well. I simply don't know.
The two police review board models that Catherine Byers talking about in Richmond and in San Jose, which I have sort of slight knowledge of, but some knowledge of. Richmond had a horribly out-of-control police department, probably still does, so I haven't really called up there and asked around. I think they were federally mandated almost to put in something. And they put in something that, again, was not really responsible to the voters or even appointed by a city council. It was just a one-person overseer. Similarly, in San Jose, you have an auditor who audits. And the reason Catherine Byers is claiming this has any kind of interest for her, aside from the fact that it would, unless she's simply arguing for a less powerful board, which she may be, since she seems to have taken positions increasingly to the right in the last 2 years, in spite of the fact that she has three strong people that could have supported her, at least two and two and a half, if you count Fitzmaurice as half a person in this matter, because I'm uncertain what his position is, and Sugar and Crone would have supported her on a number of items, civil rights items, control of police items, homeless issues, and other issues as well. The Richmond and San Jose models are rejected, at least I know the San Jose model is rejected by activists as a complete joke, even more than the Santa Cruz model is a joke. The Santa Cruz model, it has the appearance of happening as something. The San Jose model doesn't even have the appearance. It's just one person who does a little reviewing. And one of the reasons Byers may be pointing to this is because there's a technical, legalistic division between the police department, what the police department does when it investigates its own officers through its internal affairs division, which is the IA, and then those files are all supposed to be top secret, and nobody can look at them except police review boards can look at them, but they can't talk about them to people. And when the independent investigator came in, and we had our first so-called independent investigation from the last year after the May got to call it a police riot. It was a mini riot. Certainly, I can't find the right word to describe, but the police brutalized a number of people in the demonstrations against the war in Yugoslavia when there was demonstrations a year ago, May. And as a result of that, out of that, all that police misconduct and that, there was a decision by the police review board and by the city council to establish to appoint an independent investigator, a woman named Diane Christensen. We've talked about her a little bit. But then the city council decided that it would not allow her to subpoena police officers, or would not fight for that right to subpoena police officers. She decided she wouldn't even try to do it. The CPRB decided they wouldn't press her to do it. And they also decided they wouldn't let the report be made public when it was finished, because she would have seen the internal affairs documents, and in talking about them, that would have made somehow compromise the police officers involved. Well, when you're talking about police departments of our country, where these individuals, these men and women, have the power of life or death over all of us, they carry lethal weaponry, they have an enormous amount of power, and when you see that individual officers who shoot people down, it seems to be almost in cold blood or for sport, as they've done in New York City, as happened in Los Angeles, when you have full-scale rampant corruption, getting any kind of oversight of this is nearly impossible. It's just amazing what happens when you try to do it. I mean, they're struggling with that down in Los Angeles, and it's, of course, affecting the entire election, and I hear the federal government is dragging its heels on an oversight of the so-called Rampart scandal. In Santa Cruz, we had a man, Happy John Dine, shot to death, and not only no independent investigation, but the officer, Officer Connor Carey, as far as I know, is still on the force, or at least he never suffered any discipline. His partner, Officer Martin Over, who knew Happy John, should have known his proclivity for acting in a kind of weird ways, wasn't disciplined. Police chief in 24 hours, certified, that's just fine. Actually, the police chief did it within 4 hours. The DA did it within 12 hours, and the case was buried. And this has not been resurrected by the Citizens Police Review Board, as it could have been. And indeed, they might have been voted out. I keep hearing from Arnie Leff, I don't have the votes, the Keith Sugar refrain. But had he taken the position publicly, the issue would have been raised. And if he was voted down, well, he was voted down. But you've got a progressive community that gave serious landslide victories to three candidates in November of 1998, hoping they would do something. I wouldn't be surprised if you have...